Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello, welcome to the Aware Show. This is Lisa Garr, and it's such a great joy to be here today. Welcome, and thanks for joining me. Lots of great information that we always talk about on the Aware Show. If you want to check out our website, it is theawareshow.com. We always love to bring and communicate information that inspires people to grow positively and change in your life. I was thinking today, you know that phrase, when you change your thoughts, your life changes. You know, Wayne Dyer taught us this. And it is so true. And I think these days, with the way that our world is increasing in terms of pace and chaos and everything, that if you don't change your thoughts, you have the opportunity to save your life when you change your thoughts. So it's one of the things we talk a lot about on the Aware Show, is ways to think differently, communicate differently, and that absolutely comes into play with our topic today. We're talking about communication. And if you have a level of communication in your relationships, specifically your loved ones and your relationships all the way around, it branches out into everything you do. You start with the ones that are close to you, and then you go to your family members and extended family, and then friends, and then coworkers. All life is relationship and state dependent. And that is one of the things that my friend Jonathan Robinson talks about in his new book called More Love, Less Conflict. It's a communication playbook for couples. So rather than going to years and years and years of therapy where you just talk it out, this is a working dialogue between the two of you to be able to have more love and less conflict. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. So tell me a little bit about why love? Why having less conflict? What does that mean to you personally in your life?
Well, you know, I've been married over 20 years, and my wife and I used to argue a lot, and now we never argue. And it's, you know, when your life is filled with love, everything else feels pretty good. You know, love's the most important thing. So most of us haven't really studied how to get it consistently or create it around us consistently. So I wanted to get the best methods ever found, the simplest methods, and put them all in one book.
And this is from your years and years of experience helping people find basically happiness in your life, right?
Yeah, and not just working with couples, but the same methods really work in any relationship. And the place where I got a lot of these methods is I would interview people who I thought were really great communicators, like, you know, Oprah or the Dalai Lama or Bill Clinton. And I'd always ask them, what's your favorite method of communicating effectively? And these people really had good stuff. That's how they got to the top of their field. So I put my 40 favorite methods in the book, and find that, you know, if you use a couple of them, they make an immediate difference. And I hope to, you know, try a couple of them out with you on air so you can see what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. And we will definitely encourage anyone listening too to call in with as we get into this topic more about how Jonathan can maybe coach you into simple techniques of finding more love and less conflict in life, which is great. So why did you call it, by the way, that's the name of the book, More Love, Less Conflict, a communication playbook for couples. Why did you call it a communication playbook?
Well, because it's really, rather than just have a bunch of theory, you know, we all know the theory pretty much. You know, it's good to be kind and loving, and you don't want to scream at your mate or your kids. But when we're stressed, we tend to forget all that theory. Mm-hmm. What we need is a real simple strategy, a strategy that is so ridiculously simple that even when you're stressed, you can use it. So a lot of my methods are like fill in the blank statements or, you know, say these two words or something like that. So a playbook is like a playbook of strategies that you can use to, you know, either create more love or less conflict, or how to create instant intimacy with someone on a date, or how to give people feedback when they're doing something that you don't like. And most people don't know these methods. We're not taught any of them in school. So I thought it'd be good to have them all in one book.
Yes, it is. All right, well, let's dive into it. What are, first of all, the reasons why conflict exists in the first place?
Well, usually when couples come into my office, there's only one or two things going on. Either they don't understand each other. You know, I never have couples come into my office and say, you know, Jonathan, we really understand each other quite well. That's why we're wanting a divorce. You know, that doesn't happen.
Right.
So couples usually don't understand each other, or they're busy blaming each other. And I don't know about you, Lisa, but I've never once in my marriage told my wife how wrong she was and how idiotic her behavior was, where she came back and said, yeah.
Thank you.
Now I see what you're talking about. Thank you for showing me the errors of my ways. That's never happened.
Really appreciate you putting me down.
Yeah. You know, so blame never works. So that's naturally what we do when we're stressed. And then we wonder why that doesn't work, you know. So those are the two main issues that are always going on. So I teach people how not to blame, and I teach them how to get a better understanding of their mate or their child or their coworker, so that there can be a connection.
Why do you think we blame in the first place, though? Why do we put the blame on other people when we are frustrated and upset?
Well, when we're upset, we have a choice as to who's to blame for that upset. It's either them or me, and we'd prefer them.
Yeah, so it's not wanting to point the finger. Yeah.
Yeah, and in this culture, that's the language we're taught. You know, other cultures, they are actually different than that. But, you know, look at the whole political polarization going on now. That's just a reflection that our nation is bent on blame rather than understanding.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. It's not usually looking at ourselves at all. So,
no.
But when you are having other things going on, say there's work conflicts or there's frustration with finances or whatnot, why is it the person in your house that you tend to go after first when there's those types of conflicts happening?
Well, they're the closest, and you're mad, and they're right there, so they're an easy target.
How do you not and, do you know, that? How do you consciously not do that?
Well, there's a lot of methods in the book. Let me go over a couple. For example, you know, blame leads to more blame, and it never goes anywhere good. So one simple method is even if you're 99% right, as I always am, I don't know about you, but I'm always about that much right, or it feels that way, you know, I will still say, well, I can see one way that I contributed to this upset is, and then I say whatever I see that I may have done. Now, even if it's a small thing, the fact that I'm taking some responsibility tends to make my wife also take responsibility. And two people taking responsibility is not an argument, it's a connection. So we don't generally know these simple methods, so all we have left is I'm upset, you're in my face, and you're to blame.
You fall back to schoolyard tactics. So if you have, if you feel you're 99% right, start off the 1% that you have the responsibility over and open up the conversation there.
Exactly. And not only that, but also be able to appreciate something about your partner, because we all love appreciations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best predictor of how happy a couple is the number of appreciations they give to each other. So I tell my wife something that I appreciate about her, either her character or something she did recently, And because I get caught up with other stuff, I even have, don't tell my wife this, Lisa, but I have Siri on my iPhone remind me to do this every day, lest I forget.
Well, that's a good idea, because that would have helped me this morning. I woke up this morning, and there was probably about 30 minutes of mental chatter that went on before I saw my husband downstairs. And I was talking about, I've got this to do and that to do, and this isn't resolved, and that is unfulfilled, and this is it. It started just, the mind started going on all of the things that were breaking down and solutions that aren't right in front of me right now. And then the first person I saw was my husband, and I said, "Why is the kitchen such a mess?"
Right.
And he's like, "Well, hello." And he totally busted me. He's like, "Hi, I'm a human. you're in the kitchen with me."
Because he
could see my wheels spinning. So he was in the middle of something, and he was finishing up, and I was starting to clean the kitchen. I didn't really feel like talking. And then eventually put everything down. He's like, "All right, let's do this." And he helped me clean the kitchen. And then I was a happier person because I felt a little supported, and then we were able to have a conversation. And I think what I was going through in my mind was under support, under support, under support. And that helped a lot. Now, he was a bigger person this morning. I was in the schoolyard stamping my feet in the sandbox.
Well, you know, sometimes your mate is going to be in the schoolyard, and you have to figure out what's the most efficient way to get them out of that mindset. And telling them what they're doing wrong isn't usually what works. What usually works is giving people empathy. And, you know, men in particular are not very good at that. So when, you know, most women say how upset they are about the day or something like that, most men try to immediately fix the situation. And that generally pisses women off because that's not what they want. You know, they want understanding and empathy. But men have never been trained in that, so they generally can't give what they don't know, you know, is how to do.
Well, let me just talk about why that isn't what women want from a female perspective. Why we don't necessarily want to be fixed is because we want to complain about it not working. It's the oddest thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know
why. You want somebody to hear your complaints and to feel your pain.
Right.
And share it with you.
Yeah. But I'm laughing because I get stuck in that all the time. If that could last for 90 seconds, that would be awesome. And then we could move on because we do want to feel heard. We do want to feel empathy. We do want to feel understood. We do want to feel that somebody else is understanding and seeing our situation. But then the longer it lasts, then it starts to turn into victimhood and broken record.
Yeah. Well, it tends to last only because men are not playing the other side well. You know, my wife has stress and complains, but when I give her empathy well, she gets over it really quickly. When I do not give her empathy well, it becomes like she keeps on staying with that broken record.
Hmm.
So a lot of guys find that if they learn this skill, their wives seem a lot happier or get over stuff much more quickly, and it's a real win for both people.
Yeah, but what if the thing you're trying to get over is just the underlying arch in the relationship? Like maybe there's, you know, there is a lack of support, or there's the financial issue is a huge thing with couples, and there's, you know, kids or different parenting styles. What if that's not able to be gotten over in 90 seconds?
Yeah, well, those things don't get over in 90 seconds. What you can do is show people your support and that you care and that you understand. But, you know, all relationships have issues, and the question is, how can you solve those issues effectively? Certainly blame and trying to immediately fix someone is not an effective way. In the More Love, Less Conflict book, I have about a dozen different very simple methods for actually solving problems efficiently.
Let's go through some more of those. Yes.
You know, for example, let's say you and I have a money issue. You know, money is a very common issue. If you feel good about our connection and you feel like I'm supportive and listening, it makes solving issues a lot easier than if you feel like I'm trying to blame you and destroy you. So that's one thing. But once you have a sense that we're both in this together, I can ask you, well, what are two or three ideas you have that you think could work? And I'm not just asking one idea. You probably have a favorite idea, which is not the one I like. If I ask for two or three, then you kind of stretch into other possibilities. And once you've said those, I can then say, well, here are a couple of my ideas. And then you're in negotiation. You're not in the right, wrong, who's to blame, who's not to blame. You're in a negotiation. Negotiations are pretty easy to work out, whereas who's right and who's wrong never gets anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say the first one is usually the one I won't like.
Yes.
That's funny. Why is it? Because it's the one you've been hearing the whole time that's never worked?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. The one that works for one partner but not the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So ask for the second and third.
Yeah,
nice.
Exactly.
Now you're in a negotiation. I love that. What's the thing that you feel the couples complain about the most in all of your relationship helping when you help people find happiness in their lives? What do you hear the most as the issue? Can you pick one?
The thing I hear most is that my partner does not understand me. You know, there are the issues like, you know, how to deal with money, how to deal with parenting, how to deal with sex. Those are the issues, you know, the problems. But when people understand each other and they feel like their partner is there with them and gets them, working out those issues or those problems is actually relatively easy. So it's the lack of understanding because, one, we don't communicate our understanding in a way that our partner gets. You know, once again, that goes back to empathy. And, you know, Oprah's another good example where, you know, her background was she never lived in a house that even had a toilet or a bathroom, you know, and was raped twice by the time she was 14, had a stillborn child. You know, this is not somebody who looks like they're going to be successful.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, she's the most loved person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her one of the times when I was on her show, how did that happen? And she said, you know, I realized I had nothing going for me other than the fact that I cared about people and I could really empathize with them. So I made a vow every day to show my care and my empathy. And she said, it looks like that turned out pretty good, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That is one of her... That attributes, the beautiful attributes about her is that you really see that she gets into the life of somebody else and she wants to help them and make it right. Yeah, that's true.
And so few people have that ability developed that the few who do, it looks like they have a superpower and they can go literally from the bottom of the financial world or any other world to the top just because that trait is so appreciated and valued.
Mm. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. You said something else about conflict with couples. Now, I think it's an illusion to think that you're going to have a conflict-free relationship because there's always things that are changing in life. Do you feel the same way or do you really think that you can have... I mean, I like that your book says more love, less conflict. It doesn't say more love, no conflict. What do you feel about that?
Well, there's always issues that come up and things that you have to work out. What you can avoid is ever having an argument or ever, feeling like that person's not on the same team. You know, my wife and I used to argue a lot, and we haven't had an argument in over 5 years, and that's due to a very simple method that just involves saying two words.
What's that?
Well, the words are either yellow light or red light. And if we're getting upset and we're starting to get like, you know, we're ready to put each other down or say really mean things because we're upset, we can say the words yellow light. And that means that we have to take a 1 minute timeout and just calm down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And usually in that minute, by the time we go back, we're more sane. And we can work things out. Now, a red light means that we're really, really upset, and we need to take a 10-minute timeout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, just being able to say those two words when we're upset has prevented us from going down that rabbit hole of trying to hurt the other person or screaming or any of those things that we used to do.
Yeah, my husband and I use that. We call it a white flag. And It's like, white flag, okay. And he just backs off, and I back off, or one of us does, and we take a break because there's more empathy that's required in that moment than neither of us seem to have. So we do have white flag in terms of our languaging, and it keeps me from reverting back to old patterns and giving myself a break and remembering what it is that I know and who I am.
Yeah, when you have these little methods that are helpful, they make a huge difference because once you find something that works for you, you have a friend for life. You know, it doesn't go away. It's always now an ability that you have that you can pull out of your pocket.
Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you because we're broadcasting in a country that has a 50% divorce rate.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a generation that is being raised from single-parent homes. So the likelihood of that, I've heard a statistic about 25% of millennials don't even ever want to get married because they never saw it work in the first place. So with what we have today in terms of your swipe left, swipe right dating environments, do you feel that the sanctuary of marriage is respected any longer, or is that something that is changing like everything else, like religion and banking and politics? What do you feel about that? I mean, do you feel that partnership is safer? Do you think that you should enter a marriage?
I think things are changing, mostly in a bad way, because, you know, life is stressful, and yet we're not learning how to deal with that. We all yearn for intimacy and love. That hasn't changed. But a lot of the ways that we're communicating now are very superficial. You know, texting, email, Facebook, Instagram. These are not deep conversing methods of communication, just the opposite. And so we have this deep human desire to have a heart-filled connection, and we have all these what I call WMDs, which is not weapons of mass destruction, but widgets of mass distraction that keep us from getting that connection that we want. So that's why in the book I try to give lots of methods that lead to deep intimacy quickly. In fact, on my website I have a free download called The 12 Questions of Instant Intimacy. And these are questions that you can ask your partner or other people that almost always lead to a deeply intimate connection right away. And I think these types of tools are necessary to combat all the superficiality and busyness of modern-day life and modern-day marriage.
Is that the findinghappiness.com website?
No, it's actually morelovelessconflict.com.
Oh, okay. All right. So there are – oh, that's great. So there's ways that you can instantly go in and apply this to yourself, morelovelessconflict.com. Let's talk about – in the beginning of the book, you give a story of a couple that came in that absolutely wanted nothing to do with each other, and within an hour, they were holding hands and able to communicate and effectively and lovingly again. What can you do in 1 hour to fix that much resentment?
Well, you know, to me it's a miracle that you can actually, it didn't take half an hour. It didn't take an hour. It took half an hour.
Cool.
And even if couples have had years of anger and resentment, there is a yearning of the human heart to get back to love. And they just need guidance as to how to get there. Now, some of the things we did during that time was, for example, each person had to complete the sentence, a way that I see that I've contributed to this upset is. So when they're both taking some responsibility, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
I ask them both to say an appreciation to each other, something that they like in the other person, that helped. I ask them to ask their partner questions so that they could better understand their partner. That helped. I asked them both to give some empathy. And eventually you end up with what I would call a communication miracle, which is going from years of anger and upset back to love in half an hour or less. To me, that's a miracle. And that can happen rather consistently if people know how to do that. You know, like you and I can't fly, but if we have a helicopter or an airplane, we can fly. You mm-hmm. just need the right tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. So you mentioned mostly in the time that we've been together here, responsibility and empathy are two big things. And by the way, I want to mention to my callers, if you want to call in, 818-985-KPFK, you can actually talk with Jonathan about some of your questions around relationships. My guest is Jonathan Robinson. The book is More Love, Less Conflict, and that's also the website, morelovelessconflict.com. So you've mentioned responsibility and empathy. What else? What else is one of those keys in having effective communication?
Well, to complete the triad, I would say appreciation. And mm-hmm. in fact, let's do a very simple tool so okay. people can see it's not that mysterious. Mm-hmm. Now, we actually know each other, Lisa, but
yeah.
Even if I had only known you during this phone call, I would be able to complete this sentence, which is something I've noticed about you that I appreciate is. So something I notice about you that I appreciate is that you're very down to earth and real, and it's easy to feel connected to you because you're not like putting on airs. You're very vulnerable. You're very much yourself, and that makes you both a good interviewer and also somebody that's easy to feel connected to.
Aw, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Received.
Good, good. Now, you know, when people complete that sentence, they naturally feel closer. Now, I'm thinking that about you anyway. It's not like I'm making
it up.
You know.
Well, you did a good job if you were to make that.
Right. You know, but we don't always say those things. Or there's little helpers. You know, I'm not that empathetic of a person, so I have a little helper. Mm-hmm. And the little helper is to say, I notice that you're blank, and that must. I'm imagining that you feel blank. So I might say, I notice that your brow is furrowed. I'm imagining that maybe you're worried about something. Now, when I say that to my wife, mm-hmm. she loves it because it shows that I care about what's going on with her. And not that empathetic person like me can grow that muscle, and when she feels like I care about her feelings, she cares about my feelings.
Yeah, it's interesting because my husband asked me that this morning. He said, are you okay? And rather than going into the diatribe of what was going on in my mind for 30 minutes, I just said, yeah, I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
And do you ever get that from your wife? Does she just flat out lie?
Yeah, occasionally. Then I ask, well, I noticed this. Are you sure that you're not feeling that? You know, and then she'll admit it, you know.
Right, or, right.
Mm-hmm. You know, little things like that can, even the sentence, right now I'm feeling a little blank. You know, all you have to do is fill in that sentence, and it helps your partner to better understand you.
Well, it's also, take an example of something like jealousy, and social media does a lot of that. You can find somebody having communications on Facebook rather than communicating with you in person.
Yeah.
But how do you, I don't know if a person is aware enough of their feelings to say, I'm jealous of you sitting on Facebook. You give that example mm-hmm. in your book also of mm-hmm. someone who had that experience. So how does that come into play when you have when you really just want to say, this is how I feel? Could it really diffuse
yeah.
things?
Well, once again, you know, you're right that we're not always very aware of our feelings right away. So once again, little things like certain questions I have in the book can be helpful. And, you know, it might be a question like, how are you feeling right now? Now, of course, people can lie, but after a while that doesn't work. what have you been doing lately? What can I help you to do? How can I help you to feel better? What have you been thinking about lately? Those types of questions are useful for having your partner explore what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you want to do is create a safe space for them to reply. And a lot of couples don't do that. You know, they say, well, I've been looking at Facebook, and the other partner says, yeah, you shouldn't do Facebook. I told you 100 times, don't do Facebook. You know, that's not a safe place for you to be yourself. So luckily, what I've found is that in dance, it does take 2 people to tango, but it really only takes 1 really good communicator to change a relationship. Because if I ask you a good question, you don't say, that's a lousy question. You're more likely to answer that question. And by knowing these skills, you develop the superpower of being able to be safe enough for people around you to be themselves more fully, to communicate more fully. And that's the beginning of intimacy.
Mm, yeah, that is true. So it does help if you're an aware human being. It does help if you are open and have more, you know yourself a little bit more. And a lot of people that listen to the show are that way. They just need a reminder. And
yeah.
They know that, but they just need a little reminder. And I get it. And it's even myself. I host a radio show called The Aware Show, and I still get stuck in those old patterns, and that I get it really quickly, and then I can move through it. But it helps to have a conversation, and that's key, is having conversations. And you basically say, what do you think is, I'm going to ask you this, what do you think is one of the issues with therapy? Do you think that it's a good tool? Do you think that it can be a crutch? Is there a way to make it not be a crutch?
Well, all of the above. I find that, you know, if people know how to communicate effectively with, like, really simple tools, that therapy usually isn't useful. Because most of the time what I'm doing in therapy with couples is just helping them to understand each other and communicate. You know, I don't think going into your childhood when your mom did something to you when you were 3 is that useful. What really brings couples together is, do they understand each other? Do they know how to communicate effectively? Do they know how to show appreciation? And little helpers, little tools can be very useful along those lines. You know, if you look at the word intimacy, the instructions for getting there are actually in the word, into me see.
That's nice, yeah.
And yet, because we're stressed out, we need little helpers to, like, reveal ourselves. And, you know, like, I might even have couples play a game called If You Really Knew Me. And all they do is they just take turns completing the sentence, if you really knew me, you would know blank. Like, Lisa, if you really knew me, you'd know that on shows like this, I'm a little worried that I might come off like as a salesperson because I'm very enthusiastic about this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it changes lives, but I hate salespeople. So if you really knew me, you'd know that I'm always dealing with that issue in the background.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one. So,
how about you, if I really knew you?
If you really knew me, you would know that I am super passionate about what it is that I do. Super passionate about that. Yeah. And that...
I get that.
Yeah, it gets... It permeates through everything I do. So that would help. That would help. So that... When, if you knew that if there's a passion that's unfulfilled or if there's a purpose that's still yearning, then you would see, oh, there's a frustration there or there's a reason for that. And you wouldn't take it as personally, right? If I was upset.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's a related topic is like knowing what gets your partner upset. Like I have a chapter in the book about what are your triggers and what are your partner's triggers.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to be aware of that so that you don't always step on these landmines and trigger each other. But most couples never have communicated about that.
Right, right, exactly. That's funny. I was just on that chapter, and there's 5 questions that you can ask yourself when you feel like you're being triggered.
Yeah.
And so I'll go over some of these. What words or tone of voice or behavior is triggering you?
Mm-hmm. And
is that your own?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And when you're triggered...
What is your partner doing that's triggering you?
From someone else. Okay. And then when you're triggering in this way, what story do you typically tell yourself? Great question. He's this, he's that, she's this, she's that. And by the way, this can have to do with any relationship in your life. It could be siblings, it could be familial relationship, it could be work relationships, all things. We read all sorts of story into, right?
Absolutely.
What do you feel, I mean, what feeling do you get after you listen to this story, and what are you really wanting? So the story you're telling yourself, what behavior do you typically exhibit once this part of you is triggered, and then what can you do that will be more effective in getting what you want?
Right.
Question coming in from the audience here. I think it's Zenny has a question about this. Let's go to our listener here in North Pomona. Hi, is it Zenny?
Oh, hi, I'm on it.
Hi.
Radio.
There, yep, you have to just turn your radio down. What was your question for Jonathan Robinson?
That's very efficient. Hi, Lisa. Hi, everybody. Hi, Jonathan. Perfect, perfect. Hi, I want to know if there is any hope for a sibling. The very thing that you addressed about, you know, in couple situation, this is a lifelong relationship, but it's not getting any better, especially you said when one could be effective communicator, and that's me. I need help.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's always hope. Really effective communicators can always turn something around, but sometimes you might need a new approach or a new tool and than what you've done before. You know, if you keep doing the same thing, you tend to get the same result, and that's what a lot of people end up doing. So one thing I've found that works incredibly well is just imagine that you're a lot of times when dealing with a sibling and it's been contentious or a problem, that person does not feel safe because they feel like you're trying to change them or blame them or you're mad at them or whatever.
Jonathan, I'm sorry. No, there is no communication. The very sibling is an avoider.
I see. If they would be willing to read a letter from you, sometimes changing the mode of communication, like they may not take a call from you, they may not want to meet face-to-face, but they may be willing to read a heartfelt letter from you. So there's a lot of things you can try, and if you try enough things, probably something will work.
Yes, I need you. Thank you so much. I need you. I will not speak. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate that. And it does open up a huge conversation about in-laws. When you marry into a family and you don't necessarily like the family, but you like the person, but you kind of, you know, you're kind of marrying the family as well. How do you relate with in-laws without offending the person that you're married to or in partnership with?
Yeah. Well, you know, we go to gymnasiums and we lift weights. And when we're lifting weights, we don't complain about the weight because we put it there to build a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way, when you're dealing with people who you find difficult, you could just imagine that you're in the communication gymnasium and you're trying to increase your spiritual muscles or your communication muscles by learning how to have effective communication with people who are very, very different than you. And I find that that's kind of a fun challenge. My wife's mother and father support a completely different political party than I do, very intensely. And I spent, rather than make them wrong or say I don't want to spend any time around those people, I just became incredibly curious as to why they believed in what they did. And they really took to that. And they then were able to listen to my views. And we had a great discussion and got closer. Now, I was able to do that because I knew blame doesn't work. And I said, hey, this is an opportunity to try to increase my communication ability with people who I never would normally communicate with.
What if it's something you morally oppose? Like, what if your sister-in-law beats their children for discipline and they really firmly believe in that and you know how damaging that can be?
Yeah.
What do you do in that case?
Even in a situation like that, my goal would be to definitely change their behavior, right? Mm-hmm. That would be my number one goal.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to damage their kids.
Oh, I see. So in that being your goal, you don't go right into adversity.
What I would do is I would try to get rapport and understand them so that they felt safe with me and could actually listen to me. Once they felt safe and understood, then I could go into the communication skills known as persuasion, which is a whole other area, and that's a really important skill to have, whether it be in marketing for your business or in trying to tell your teenage kid that they shouldn't do heroin. Mm. So these are advanced communication skills that flow from some of the basics, such as understanding, empathy, and things like that. I persuade a lot of people, and the reason I'm so good at it is because they feel that they are understood by me. And once people feel understood, they kind of relax and let go of being defensive, and then they can really hear you. And that feels really good.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting. So, I mean, you have a lot of answers for things. It's incredible. Yeah, you can go about that through various different types of communication skills. What, by the way, is your background, if you could share that with our listeners a little bit here, of what where you learned all of this, other than your 20-year marriage? What is your background and your experience in learning all of this?
Well, one of the reasons I can teach it is because I had absolutely zero inherent skill in this area.
You had to learn it all.
Mm-hmm. At age 12, my parents were going to put me in a psychiatric hospital because I was severely depressed and I had stopped talking completely. And they said, if you don't start talking within 6 months, that's where we're going to put you. And so I got into self-help and meditation and reading about communication at age 12. Kind of had my midlife crisis then, which is a good time to have one. And so I really became fascinated that, you know, somebody like Oprah can be at the bottom of society to the top of the world just through this one skill. And there's not many, so I just became very interested in it. I read a lot of books and tried a lot of stuff. I saw that unlike a lot of skills that might take thousands of hours to learn, you can get twice as good at communication by studying it for an hour. And there's not many things that fit into that category, so I just kept like finding it fascinating and seeing what really worked, what really didn't in the modern-day stressful marriages and relationships that we have. So that's how I got into it, and just, you know, it kept making my life better.
It's interesting. I mean, would you consider yourself more naturally introverted?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, you know, meditate every day. I recharge by being alone. But, you know, I've been able to reach hundreds of millions of people on TV partly because I learned how to speak TV, you know. You know, you're a really good interviewer. You've learned how to do that. There's all these different aspects of communication, like persuasion or empathy or how to talk to children, how to talk to men, how to talk to women. They're all a little bit different, but if you get the basics, then it's pretty easy to learn the simple tools that become more effective with that audience.
The basics like rapport, like empathy. These are simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very simple. Well, that's what you could do with someone who, as we were talking about earlier, that have opposing views or that are not in rapport with you, is try to establish rapport. Back to our listener's question earlier, though, what if they're totally avoiding you? Many people have this situation in a relationship where they just ghost them, gone, cut off. How do you deal with that? Have you had that situation in your practice?
Absolutely. And it's actually not very infrequent. It's somewhat frequent. I've had probably 99% success with those types of cases.
Wow.
But it's not easy. But there are a couple methods that are so ridiculously effective that they'll work with somebody who said, I'm never going to talk to you again no matter what, and they end up repairing that relationship. Now, to do that, you have to get out the big guns. And the big guns usually involve writing a letter of deep, heartfelt apology and one of appreciation. Not many people can resist a real heartfelt apology or a real heartfelt appreciation.
Hmm.
Maybe the 300 cases I've had of that, I saw two people that weren't responsive. You know, because human beings have a similar psychology everywhere, and when they're hurt, they will sometimes create a big defense or a big wall, but there are ways to get through that hurt, and I actually have examples of how to do that in the book. Once again, these things are not easy to do because that person probably hurt you back. But if it's really important, there are ways to handle even those situations.
Even if you don't feel like you have anything to apologize for, what would you apologize for?
Well, once again, I would apologize for something you could sincerely say that you regret.
Okay.
You know, I had a friend who wouldn't talk to me. This is many years ago. And I said, I really regret that you were hurt. I really regret that our friendship is either on hold or gone. And I apologize for the amount of hurt that it must have caused you, because I know how badly I'm hurt. Those were all sincere things I could say, and the person could listen to that. And we were able to repair that relationship. I didn't know what I had done in this case at all. I had no clue. So I couldn't apologize for that. But I could express regret and sadness, and that was creating a safe enough environment where the person was able to respond.
Hmm. Very interesting. What about in the situation where you have, and this goes back to the relative situation, is a lot of relatives become estranged from each other. For some reason, it has a lot to do with, I don't know, maybe lack of value on family that we're seeing politically and so forth. But when that happens, is that repairable through something like this, through opening up a relationship again and say, look, I regret that we've fallen out of contact. Can we, you know, reestablish each other on, you know, social media or something if that feels safer to stay, you know, connected at that level? Is that something that you've seen work?
It happens all the time. It's actually not that hard. Once again, mm-hmm. You know, flying is pretty close to impossible unless you have an airplane or a helicopter. But if you have an airplane or a helicopter, it's as easy as anything. You just walk on board.
Uh-huh.
You know? So,
great point.
If you keep doing the same wrong thing over and over again, expecting a new result, yes, it is impossible in that case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you do the right thing, the thing that always works, it's really not that hard. But, you know, most people don't even have 5 minutes of communication training in their life, even though that's what they do all the time. They're always communicating.
Interesting.
Once you read a book or you take a course, you start to see that there's a science to this. There's a science that is reliable and consistent and can always get you from hurt to love in a short period of time if you know how to do that.
Mm. There's so many tools and techniques in your book, which is great. Again, it's called More Love, Less Conflict. It's a communication playbook for couples. So you can get it even if your partner doesn't know that you have it and start to work on some of these things without them even knowing. It could pretty much work on a one-sided basis for a little while, couldn't it?
Yeah, they would just think, wow, they've become a lot more loving, a lot more understanding, and I feel much closer to them. I don't know why. You know, that would be kind of what would happen, and soon they would be opening up and doing it back because we tend to be mirrors in how we communicate with each other.
Isn't that fantastic that these tools are that effective? And it also has to do with taking responsibility and having empathy, because it really takes it on yourself to do something about it and put an effort in. And then also, I'm sure you have those couples where it's just not going to work. What do you tell them if you just see that there's not a conflict resolution possible? Say there's kids involved, and it's a divorce.
Yeah, I'm very upfront. You know, probably 10% of the couples I see, I say, you know, now that we're communicating better, I can see that you guys want totally different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, unless you're willing to give up your deepest values, you're not going to be able to have a happy marriage together. But even when those couples separate, if they separate with understanding and love, I feel like it was a success. And so I don't feel bad about that. I feel like, okay, we now want different things, and we can work out the kid situation or whatever, because now we can communicate with each other without putting the other person down or making them wrong. We just need to be able to work out problems. And certainly that happens. You know, people grow and change, and sometimes they want totally different things.
Right. Yes, and values are not aligned, and that makes perfect sense. And there's no blame on anything like that. But it can be easier on the kids, if they're still young and so forth, to not have so much conflict in a relationship. Yeah.
Yeah, studies show that what really affects kids is the amount of conflict. Divorce is fine as long as the parents actually communicate effectively with each other. And, you know, I think this is one of the best things you can do for your kids, is learn how to communicate more effectively, because your kids take on your communication patterns. So I think of it as like this is a way that you're actually giving to the people you care about as well.
That's really good to hear. So you say statistics show that if there's less conflict in a divorce, then it's okay.
Yeah,
it works out.
Kids of divorce where the parents communicate well show no ill effects. Kids who are with parents who fight a lot show lots of ill effects.
Mm-hmm. Great point. On the relationship thing, you also mentioned in your book about intimacy in a relationship. I was reading an article the other day on something was pitched to me on sexless marriages. So I can't remember what it was, but saying that there's a really high statistic of sexless marriages. Have you heard about that?
It's something like 20%. And, you know, in this culture, we have two types of touching. We have sex and nothing, you know, and that's unfortunate. You know, even apes figure out ways of touching each other and grooming each other all the time. So I have some simple methods. For example, like just writing down for your partner three things that you really enjoy in bed and three things that you don't care for. But couples don't normally share this stuff, so their sex life isn't as good as it could be just because they don't have the right information. Also, when couples are feeling connected and more intimate with each other, sex tends to be restored. But a lot of couples, you know, they get busy, they're stressed, they have lost that intimacy, and so sex tends to fade away.
Is this why you feel the divorce rate happens after an empty nest?
Yeah, that's one reason. There's other reasons. It's certainly a change of life, but that's certainly a contributing reason.
Yeah, I was speaking with a relationship expert the other day, and she was saying that's the highest level of conflict that she has seen is with long-term marriages, divorce in long-term marriage situations.
Yeah, because, you know, now your kids aren't holding the relationship together. If you don't have the communication to hold it together, then you don't have much of anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that has a lot to do with it. There could be ways to mend that, though. You could definitely have ways to create more intimacy and more connection and communication by playing some of the games that you're mentioning in your book.
Yeah, your listeners can download the 12 questions of instant intimacy and start there. People are often astounded with something as simple as that they feel they can ask these 12 questions to a stranger and say, I feel closer to this person than I felt with anybody, even my best friend in years. That's how effective some things are. So I encourage people to, you know, that's a free download. They can try that out.
Can we go through a couple of them?
Sure.
Okay, cool. I appreciate that. So I was on your website, by the way, The More Love, Less Conflict, and you can get the first chapter free, which is great. And the download, it's just, you know, simply opting in and so forth. What are some of the things that you can do? 12 instant intimacy questions, one of them.
Well, one question would be asking you, what brings you the most joy in your life currently?
Great. Gosh, looking at the ocean, that brings me a lot of joy.
Uh-huh.
Travel brings me a lot of joy.
You know, and then some questions are more challenging, such as, is there anything that you have avoided saying to me that you'd like to say?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You know, what was your first impression of me? There's what's something that you really appreciate about yourself? What's something that you really appreciate about me? These are all questions that we like to know the answers to. They're kind of below the surface. And when you share this stuff, once again, when you reveal stuff, it creates that intimate bond.
That's a great exercise to do together. And it doesn't necessarily require a therapist. You can do that on a night out, or you can do that on a trip, or you can do it on a road, you know, whatever.
You're doing a car ride.
You can do, I was going to say a road trip, then I thought, that's not a great idea. But the bottom line here is that no matter what level of a relationship you're in, there is help.
Yeah.
Do both couples or both partners have to want to work on it, though?
No, that's a great thing. You know, that's
amazing.
Really just one person changing their communication affects the entire relationship. And
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of my books, only one partner is reading them. And yeah, I get a lot of emails saying, wow, it was amazing when I started to give empathy that just completely changed everything around. And I was just flabbergasted. People are often surprised at how effective it is. They don't think that little things like this will make that big of a difference. So 90% of my emails are like, wow, I couldn't believe how effective that was.
That's so great. And it works. And it works on so many different levels. I mean, this could, as we said earlier in the show, everything that you do, you're in relationship with. And if you can learn just 12 of these relationship skills or 10 of them, it can change every relationship in your life, which is so cool and really effective. And I thank you so much, Jonathan, for putting this all in one place for people to understand.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And I will see you soon. It's great to talk with you on my show, and always a joy to see you.
Likewise.
All right. Again, the book is called More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples, and I would say anyone you're in relationship with. And you can check that out. The website is morelovelessconflict.com. You can download these 12 questions, 12 deeper intimacy questions, which is really super easy. And thank you so much for listening today and for being with me. I really appreciate your energy and your phone calls and everything that makes this show happen. Thank you so much. Thank you, D'Angelo, for helping out today in the station. And Gina Salvati, thank you so much, executive producer of the show. And Joyce Walker, and I am Lisa Garr. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.